is Red Eyes Radio.
Hello, my friends, and welcome to Red Eyes Radio. Thank you for tuning in to bbsradio.com. Or if you are listening from the archives sometime in the future. My name is Henrik Palmgren, and I'm coming to you from the west coast of Sweden, and I will be your host for the following hour. Today we have a very interesting program for you. Our guest is Tom Horn from RaidersNewsUpdate.com, and I've been eager to get him on the show for a while now, so I'm very excited about this program. I think that the first time I heard Tom Horn was on a very interesting series that he did together with Stephen Quayle on the Q-Files about psychotronic warfare, transhumanism and singularity. Tom has a very interesting take on what is known as the Stargate and Stargate technology and the many things surrounding that concept, like everything from mind control, cyborgs, to cloning and more esoteric stuff and occult rituals. And Tom at least reminds me a little bit in his research, a little bit about people like Michael S. Heiser and David Flynn, but he encapsulates this in a broader picture and takes it a step further, which I think is very interesting stuff. And I also want to mention that Tom Horn is the co-author, together with Nita Horn, to the fiction book The Ahriman Gate. He has also a very interesting 14-part article series on his site called Stargates and Those Invited Through the Portal. He also now hosts the Q-Files on Thursdays, if I remember correctly, and his most recent project that I know he's involved in is an online magazine called Anomalous Magazine. And wow, Tom, you're all over the place, and you seem to be a very busy man, so I'm very glad to have you here. Welcome to the program, Tom.
Well, Henrik, thanks for inviting me on your program. It took a bit of juggling on both of our parts to put this together, but I'm glad we was able to work it out. And yes, you're right, I'm busy. And somehow I keep telling myself every week that after this week it's going to slow down. But it never does.
It never does, yeah.
It never does.
Life doesn't stop on us, I guess.
I guess.
Yeah, I'm very, very glad to have you here. And as I said, thank you for taking the time. Considering all that you are involved in, you're very busy. And we said that we will begin today to talk a little bit about UFO disclosure and a little bit about the Nephilim, but before we go there, to get things started, if you want to, I would really like to know how you came onto the path of researching these kinds of topics, Tom. It's, you know, it's not very mainstream, so to speak.
No, it's not. And of course, if you know my background, you know, I was a pastor for 25 years, 26 years. I was also an exorcist. And but you know, some of this goes back to when I was a child, things that were happening in my family, and especially with regard to my sister, some discoveries that were made by my dad, after which a phenomenon began occurring with my sister, and then finally with her daughter, and then finally with her niece. Seemed to be kind of a generational phenomenon that, as a pastor, I only years later began recognizing as being equivalent to what some people would refer to as alien abduction phenomenon.
Ah.
And it was no part of our worldview. I mean, I was raised in a very conservative home. We weren't allowed to, as children, we weren't allowed to think about such crazy things as that. And for that matter, that many decades ago, there really wasn't any widespread ideas or established criterion for what alien abduction might be defined as being.
Yeah.
It was only years later when I was pastoring and I was a researcher and I was doing some other research for a book that I was writing that I began discovering redundantly around the world that people were reporting the same kind of phenomenon that I knew had been experienced in my family with regard to my sister and her daughter and niece. And that, yeah, we, as a family, we had covered this up. I mean, we didn't talk about it at all. I saw that it was happening, and then as I began researching the phenomenon, I, I believe that I find that it's happening from the beginning of time. And so that was kind of what led me to trying to determine, you know, what is the phenomenon?
Yeah.
If this is real, what are these intelligences? Why would they be doing what they're doing? What does it mean to us as a species, as people, you know, existing on this planet and trying just to live our lives day to day? And what was this redundant report that was given throughout all of these various civilizations down through time, where they also talked about these beings interacting with the human race? And typically, of course, in ancient history, they're referring to them as the gods.
Yeah.
But it was that puzzle, and that just, I guess maybe I'm kind of like the curious cat. Hopefully I don't get killed like the curious cat. But, you know, I just wanted to find out what the phenomenon meant, and it led me in places I never expected to go.
Ah, interesting. And have you, if you don't mind me asking, have you personally been having these experiences?
No, I never did. But that's a long and detailed story that would require two or three of your one-hour program to discuss. But it simply was a phenomenon that I was at arm's length from.
Yeah.
And because I knew the people who were experiencing these things, I knew that these were honest people. These were stable people.
Yeah.
They weren't mental patients. And they didn't want what was happening. It wasn't like they were inviting it to happen or looking for it. It just was something that suddenly interrupted their lives.
Yeah. And you have, I think, come onto a very interesting path in researching all this. And of course, you have a biblical perspective, I guess, on this, all these things that are happening. And did this... was this something that was with you all the time, so to speak, or did you come up to this, to the biblical perspective, as towards the end of this research process?
Well, I would say actually both. I certainly started out with a bias towards a biblical worldview because it was the way I was raised, and you know, Henrik, all of us are raised within a particular kind of worldview. It's established in us when we're kids, and as we grow up, we try to make the things around us make sense within the context of our upbringing.
Yeah.
Sometimes, you know, we, especially when we're teenagers, you know, we get kind of rebellious and we beat against the we beat against the perimeters that society and our family have put around us. But
sure.
For the most part, we usually typically come back. The one thing, though, I will say, and the way I was raised and the way I've raised my children is to be honest.
Yeah.
And you can only defend the defensible. In other words, what you believe needs to be solid in terms of both its theology and in terms of its scope, its worldview, its history, its geopolitics. It needs to be something that has some historical basis in reality, or at least in scientific reality.
Of course.
And so for me, I started out with a bias, but I was open-minded about the research. The research actually brought me back to many of the things that I had believed in the first place. And I certainly do today have a solid biblical world view, but I would not compare myself to people who tend to go out of their way to offend those who don't agree with them. That's not my style.
Yeah, that's great. We need to hear all sides of the story here, and that's why I also want to have you on the program to, you know, contribute your perspective, and I think it's very interesting. And, you know, to dive into it a bit here, I guess, where do you want to begin?
From what I had understood, we were going to start today talking about official disclosure, which is pretty relevant to me right now. One of the things that I can't even explain how it has happened, but in my research over time, I've had the privilege of being introduced to probably all of the A-list of people who operate in this sphere. Some of them are good friends of mine today, and over the last few weeks, in fact, I've had the opportunity, because, you know, when you hit the summer over here in the United States, you start having a lot of UFO festivals and festivals for unexplained phenomenon, things like that.
Yeah.
Our Roswell Festival is coming up. The McMinnville Festival, which is the second largest UFO festival in the United States, just concluded recently.
Mm.
And so a lot of my friends, you know, start coming out of the woodwork, and I'm talking to guys, well, by the way, on both sides of the aisle, not just people like you mentioned, Mike Kaiser, David Flynn. Those guys are friends of mine. I have real respect for them.
Yeah.
I have friends who don't agree with me or them. I mean, you know, guys that have a completely different way of looking at things. And but as a consequence of the last few weeks, I've had the opportunity to talk to a lot of these people that are connected to ufology at the top, including, by the way, Nick Pope, Dr. Stephen Greer of the Disclosure Project, some of the other guys like Stanton Friedman and so on.
Yeah.
And I can tell you that not all, but many of these people have a sense now, a sudden sense about impending official disclosure of contact with extraterrestrial intelligence.
Yes.
In other words, that preparations are underway now by governments of the world to make full disclosure.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, you have to ask yourself, you know, why do guys like political activist Stephen Bassett here in the U.S., who knows a lot of these political figures and military figures, you know, why did he just a few weeks ago move his paradigm clock, which signals official disclosure, why did he move it forward to 15 seconds before midnight? I mean, what does he know that caused him to do that?
Exactly.
Why did Colonel Jesse Marcel Jr. Feel the need to get his book out on Roswell this year? And I'll tell you, since I was the first guy to sit down with him and to interview him both on and off the record regarding his new book, I can tell you that his sense among some of the military officials, and remember that Marcel Jr. is the only guy that we know of on Earth who actually handled the Roswell debris.
Yeah, that's right.
And it was his dad who was the lead investigator of the site and of the recovery. And so he's very much connected both in the military and the government at the highest level with people who have an interest in this. And he told me in no uncertain terms that the guys that he has spoken to privately, that there's a strong belief among the military and government elite that we're moving toward official disclosure now.
Hmm.
And by the way, I also think that there's some stuff that could come out of the woodwork here. I mean, the extradition and trial of Gary McKinnon.
Exactly.
You know. Yeah, I mean, he hacked into the U.S. and NASA computers. I think that could prove interesting as he starts describing some of what he saw there. He has talked a little bit about some of what he has saw, the gigantic UFO that he claims was photographed in space in one of the not-cleaned files that he found at NASA, which, of course, if that's true, would support claims by other ex-NASA employees who say they when they were there, they routinely airbrushed these UFOs out of satellite photos.
Yeah, and I must, sorry to interrupt here, but I must ask you, the way, if you're familiar with the way he hack into these computers as NASA, it's almost, you know, an embarrassing thing for them too, because there were basically no security, no firewalls, nothing, and he just, you know, popped right through the Windows. Some kind of help system, I guess, there. And I mean, do you think that this could somehow be a part of the disclosure process or the plan, you know, to have this undercurrent that a private guy hacks in like this, and now, of course, at this particular time, it becomes official that he did this? What's your take on that?
Well, I mean, I don't know. At this point in the game, anything is possible.
Yeah.
And what I can say is that whether or not that's the case, it could prove to be more interesting than most people right now know. I mean, I know that last month the courts there in Britain cleared the way for his extradition to the United States.
Yeah.
And you know, over here he might face 50 years, essentially life in prison.
Yeah.
And especially if he's tried in a military court over here. But then on the other hand, there's some precedent that you know, a secret enemy combatant like trial isn't going to work in this case. And it could be that pressure, the people who are listening to this radio broadcast probably are aware that he's kind of becoming something of a cause celeb, you know, in the underground there in the UK.
Yeah.
And it could put a lot of pressure on the United States, either to allow him to be tried in the UK, or if they follow through with the extradition, which I'm assuming they will, that the trial be public here in the U.S. and not a military trial. But I think the government's going to go for a military trial. And even if they do, that information could be leaked into the public.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I have I have at least one high-ranking contact that at appropriate times gives me information. I know how this works. Mm-hmm. I know that it could happen that if some intelligent defense attorney who's defending McKinnon, even in a closed trial,
yeah.
starts raising questions about either UFO back engineering or even anti-gravity experiments that were being funded in the U.S. by black budgets or SAPOC budgets, things that taxpayers over here are paying for and don't even know about.
Yeah.
I mean, that could really put a lot of egg on both the existing and past administrations' faces. So I don't know. But I guess the point is that when you're talking about official disclosure and where we are now, I think people can expect this year we're going to see a real ratcheting up. And here's another thing that I would tell people to watch for. It's already happening, and I predicted this was going to happen last year, and it's going to get much more significant in the next few months.
Yeah.
And that is this marriage between science and religion on the issue of official disclosure. And the reason is because when official disclosure is made, those are the two fields of study, science and religion, where most of the world is going to be looking for answers. They're going to be looking for explanations. People of faith are going to want to know what it means to their worldview. People of science are going to want to know what it means to their worldview. And so I think, Enric, first of all, we'll see more and more coming out now.
Yeah.
We've already seen some news stories about recent improvements in our understanding of general relativity. And how that is causing some people to believe in the whole idea of wormholes or stargates, matter that we haven't understood before in the past, how that could be manipulated by unknowns, by superintelligences,
of course,
who are appearing and disappearing through these. You know, Alan Holt back in '79, he defined what's called the field reconnaissance space-time tunneling, or what today we talk about as wormholes, stargates, this whole idea that there could be these hyperspace tunnels that could connect remote regions of our universe, or maybe different dimensions. You know, this week there's a study that's going on here in the U.S. Where scientists are trying to test whether they can find the fifth dimension.
Yeah, I saw that article on your site. Excellent, and it's very interesting. There have been quite a few, just as you say, of these kind of articles lately. And do you think that these, you know, these kinds of subjects, that they will merge somehow and present, you know, a unified theory, or what's your take on that?
No, I do. I mean, I think right now with the M-brain theory, you know, there are scientists now that are kind of debunking the super string theory, but the bottom line is science, you know, is an investigation of what we don't yet understand, but what's based on good science models.
Yeah.
And now but you know, years ago, the whole idea that there could be some method for intelligences that may be millions or billions or trillions of years in advance of our knowledge, that they could somehow manipulate wormhole technology. When we're talking about wormholes or stargates, you know, you might be talking about far distances of galaxies that are somehow connected through a portal, or we can be talking about even different dimensions.
Yeah.
And not just the fifth dimension. Now we're all the way up to, I think, something like 12 dimensions in theoretical science, our quantum science. But now we're even talking about maybe different moments in time. ET, in other words, could be us. Trillions of years into the future, billions of years into the future, coming back and peering through and looking at ourselves and studying ourselves, you know. I mean, that the whole idea of that is sounds fantastic. It sounds more esoteric than exoteric.
Yes,
but the bottom line is it's based now on good science. It's based on science models that we actually can understand that there could be these beings that are traveling through these space-time tunnels from either incredibly far distances to the Earth in matters of seconds, or maybe even at speeds greater than light, or maybe they exist all around us in parallel universes, and they're simply moving from one universe to the other.
Yeah.
But it's this marriage of science and religion. So on the one hand, you have that kind of information that's coming at us now, and I think you're going to see more and more and more of it. It's going to ratchet up at a phenomenal pace over the next year, the next year and a half.
Yeah.
But what it's also doing is it's putting pressure on religious institutions, some of whom also have intellectuals who are part of their hierarchy, who also study astronomy and physics and quantum physics and quantum mathematics.
Yes.
And they're becoming increasingly convinced that that the world's great faiths need to accept the possibility of ET, and they better prepare their doctrinal positions to be able to explain to their followers what that could mean as they describe it in their own ways, within their own belief systems.
Yeah.
And the whole idea being that how these ETs have been for eons somehow incarnating themselves through these dimensional openings into our three-dimensional reality, or fourth dimension if you add time, or fifth dimension if these guys this week, last year I think I rang a few bells. It's been maybe about a year ago, because it was when my book, The Ahriman Gate. Mm-hmm. By the way, for those that don't know how to spell that, it's Ahriman.
Yeah.
But when the book, The Ahriman Gate, first came out, I was doing a radio show, and I had predicted that within 90 days or so, documents would come out of the Vatican. Now, I was able to predict that not because I'm a seer, but because I had information, legitimate information, that was given to me, and that within 90 days or so, documentation would be coming out of the Vatican, which would support the whole idea that we are closer now than ever before, and that we have a greater than not possibility. That's the position now of guys like Guy Cosmonalgo, a Jesuit, an astronomer, Jose Fuentes, Monsignor Corrado Balducci, many of the leaders within the Vatican now who study in this field, and by the way, whose work is being published by Vatican-owned publishing houses, meaning that it's passing a review committee, so that it's both good in terms of theology as far and also maybe appropriate in terms of what the Vatican would want to communicate to their followers. And the reason why the Vatican is important in all of this, of course, is because of the large number of people around the world that they represent in terms of Christianity, in terms of one of the great faiths.
Of course.
And we all know that in terms of official disclosure, whenever the leaders of the world and the both government and religious leaders of the world walk out into the well of the United Nations or however they choose to do this and say, ladies and gentlemen, we're in contact with extraterrestrial intelligence, we all know that the Pope is going to be there.
Yeah, absolutely.
He would have to be there. And so now think about, in the last year, how many publications have come out in terms of writing various things that would accommodate official disclosure, and from the Vatican, and not the least of which, of course, was Intelligent Life and the Universe, the Catholic Belief, the Search for Extraterrestrial Intelligent Life by Guy Cosmonalgo, which was published by the Catholic Truth Society. But one other thing, and then maybe I should get off of that, but
please go ahead. Yeah.
It's interesting. If you read my book, The Ahriman Gate, there's a guy, there's a priest in there by the name of Malachi Molina.
Mm-hmm.
But that character is actually based on the real life Malachi Martin.
Yeah, yeah.
Who I had a great deal of respect for.
Yeah.
And what I tell people is, don't forget this, because this is easy to forget. But don't forget that in 1997, on Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell, Bell asked Father Malachi Martin why the Vatican was so invested in the study of deep space at the Advanced Technology Telescope, that project there at Mount Carmel, in Arizona.
Yeah.
And it was Malachi's answer when he said, because the mentality among those who are at the highest levels of the Vatican administration and geopolitics know, and what he said was astonishing, because his answer was, they know what is approaching us.
Mm-hmm.
And now he's talking about, why are we studying deep space?
Yeah.
And Malachi says, because they know what is approaching us, and that it could be of great importance within the next 5 to 10 years. And I would tell people, you know, remember that Malachi was an eminent theologian. He was a retired professor of the Pontifical Biblical Institute. He was uniquely qualified to hold in secret information pertaining to the Vatican study of deep space.
Yeah.
And why would he have said that we're studying deep space? Because we're concerned with what's approaching us and the fact that it could be very relevant within the next 5 to 10 years. And then that show was followed in subsequent interviews with discussions of what Malachi described as a mysterious object in the sky, a sign in the sky that he believed was approaching the world from the north. Now, he died in 1999, of course, not before allegedly telling his good friend Art Bell a secret that all of us would like to know, and that some people believe it relates to this space object. But the bottom line is, think of that 5 to 10 year time frame. We're standing today literally at the threshold. There's only 12 months left now what Malachi Martin predicted in terms of what would be both relevant and important and was known to be important by the hierarchy at the Vatican. And now, all of a sudden, in the past 18 months, we have this plethora of information coming out of the Vatican that's saying that the discovery, the disclosure of extraterrestrial intelligence will not threaten the Catholic Church. Potentially, these beings even could be evangelized. I mean, they're really going out of their way now to accommodate that.
They are.
So I just think, Henrik, that when you're talking about official disclosure, you're going to see, I think, a ratcheting up now of both information, viable information coming from reputable resources, both on the scientific side and also on the religion side,
from the guys
that I'm talking to in the background, who are connected at the hip with people both in the current administration, past administration, and also in the military. There's an echo. By the way, there's an echo through the Pentagon now that is saying that we might be facing the imminent return of the gods of Samaria. So, I mean, from all different kinds of world views and opinions, there is this nervous sense that we're running out of time to prepare the world for what's coming, and what's coming is contact. I'm telling you, that's what many people believe.
Yeah. And a bunch of questions just opens up here, but to tie it back a little bit to Malachi Martin, this, of course, I guess, kind of jump-started the Planet X movement, for lack of a better term. I mean, do you have any idea of what he meant by this statement?
No, I don't think he was referring to Planet X. I've read some of that, and I do think that, you know, if you look at the funding, you know, they always say follow the money.
Yeah.
And if you look at the amount of money that we're spending to try to find extraplanetary planets that we think could inhabit life. And in fact, just this week, you know, there are scientists over here in the U.S. that are scratching their head because some of our weather satellites, which are deemed to be very important, especially in light of the political catastrophe of Katrina and some of the other, you know, what happened in New Orleans that has put a great deal of pressure on the administration and on the Federal Emergency Management Agency, FEMA, to be better prepared. And so we funded in budget, we funded these satellites. They're supposed to study the weather to give us better predicting capacity to know what's going to happen there. But just this week, all of that was slashed out of the NASA budget. But guess what was funded? Returning to the moon, putting man on the moon, and the search for extraterrestrial life. So what I tell people is follow the money.
Yeah.
I mean, is Nibiru coming around the bend? I don't know. I personally think that Malachi was looking at something else. But the bottom line is, and you are right, of course, there was a great deal of wild speculation on a lot of different fronts about what Malachi meant. And I'm not here to even suggest that I know exactly what he was talking about. All I was saying and am saying is that we've got less than 12 months now left in his prediction, and isn't it an amazing coincidence that now suddenly we're being faced with the release of a significant amount of information from the scientific community, many of whom are working out of laboratories who get grants from the government. Why in the world are they studying membrane theories? Why are they studying various dimensions and dimensionality?
Yeah.
Why are they studying the kind of stuff that I write about, you know, stargates and those who come through them? You would think this would be relegated to the sci-fi community, to the next Star Trek movie.
Exactly.
But we're talking about a significant amount of government grants, at least in the U.S., and I think probably also in other countries, that are funding research into these fields, and it's interesting to ask the question why and why now.
Absolutely, and it's extremely interesting to follow this and track this, and just as you say, the terminology that they use sometimes is also interesting. You know, they talk about the I read a few articles about also these, you know, opening the portals and the dimensions and they call it the Holy Grail, and then a bunch of, you know, it always ties back somehow to the mythological themes often also, I think, and it's very interesting, and I think that you have highlighted that excellently with the interviews that I've heard you on previously. So this is very interesting, and if we are to, you know, to talk a little bit about who this actually might be, I mean, it's, I know it's almost an impossible question to answer, I guess, but I mean, are these the same guys? Are that? I mean, if you leave to the side for now, if or not the UFOs exist or so forth, let's assume that you know that they are there for the sake of the discussion, and then focus on who they are, and what's your take on this? I mean, are these the ancient gods, or are they demons or fallen angels? What's your take on this?
Well, my take on it is that many of us from different points of view are looking at the same phenomenon. I had somebody one time ask me if I'd go on Coast to Coast. In fact, this was brought up when I was on Coast to Coast with George Norrie just a couple of weeks ago. The question, would I take on Zachariah Sitchin in a debate about worldviews and interpreting the phenomenon? I said, no, I wouldn't, and for two reasons. One, because I'm not qualified. I'm not smart enough to take on Zachariah Sitchin. I'd just sick my friend Mike Kaiser on him. But I'm not smart enough to do it. And secondly, I don't know what the point of that would be. I mean, I think that he was raised differently than I was raised, but both of us are looking at the same empirical and historical evidence.
Yeah.
We're both studying the same phenomenon, and neither one of us could, at least not right now today, with any real sense of conclusion, determine for argument's sake who was right.
Yeah.
And so I much more prefer my own style, Henrik, is to have an appreciation for other people who are honest investigators of the phenomenon and who are trying to determine for themselves.
Yeah.
What this means, and I'd much rather work together with them, and while at the same time I don't compromise what I believe personally, but I want an honest and open investigation of the phenomenon. Now, to answer your question, I mean, I mentioned a moment ago that there are people in the Pentagon now. By the way, this has not only been substantiated by me. Some of my friends, Stan Deo, told me that he's heard from a contact that he has, a fairly high-level resource, that used the same language. In fact, it sounded like a quote, so I think him and I going up the top of the tree somewhere are hitting the same source, and that is that they're looking for a return of the Sumerian gods. Others would say we're talking about a return of the Nephilim. Some people say we're talking about a return of the giants. So how would all of this now tie into this other subject that we were going to talk about today, and that is the Nephilim? In several ways, and I know we're going to run out of time in a few minutes, so let me try to just say this quickly. I believe that a kind of transgenic science was used in ancient times, And the story is redundant. It can be proved over and over again that it exists both in mythology and what, it, at least in the time of the ancients, wasn't considered mythology. It was considered their history.
Yeah.
It's primarily based on the history of these stories from these different civilizations that speak to us of a time when the gods came down.
Yeah.
And they mingled their species with the human race. And for some reason, it seemed to require the need to blend various species in order to create a pathway, a portal, through which they could extend themselves into the material world. That's even talked about in the Bible.
Yeah.
And there again, when you look at what even modern researchers have found, secular researchers, not people not with particular religious ideas, this connection between what the ancient watchers were doing and what modern abduction phenomenon indicates,
yeah.
there is this element, this need for vital energy, molecular energy, that is associated with three-dimensional life forms that somehow seems to be required as a kind of construct material for achieving incarnation by these other-dimensional beings. And here's a thought for you, yeah. Henrik. If the Creator alone possesses the power to speak in the Bible, in the Hebrew, that's Hayah, let there be.
Yeah.
If the Creator alone has the ability to call raw atomic or nuclear energy into particular kinds of molecular form, would it be true, this seems to be the testimony of these ancient texts, that after that fact, created living energy might be able to be manipulated by the lesser gods.
Yeah.
Now, whether you're talking about those angels a la Mike Heiser, who helped God in creation but fell after the fact,
yeah.
Or whether you're talking Sumerian theology, it seems to be that these lesser gods have some power, let's call it science, advanced science, to be able to use that created matter to construct for themselves three-dimensional expressions. And
yeah.
And researchers, John Keel, other guys, have said that that's the reason why you find this where animals and humans have been killed and mutilated or even stolen, disappeared in these UFO flap areas, because that molecular energy, for whatever reason, is needed.
Mm.
Now, in the case of the watchers of the Book of Enoch in the Old Testament, the use of vital energy as a construct material for forming this dimensional pathway,
yeah.
it is interesting because it appears to have included the need for both animals and humans, and that's the interest I have in that goes back to transgenic science.
Yeah.
Enoch, in his rudimentary language, he says they sinned against the animals as well as the humans. And for me, that's an interesting point. You have to ask yourself if the only reason why the Watchers involved themselves with women was because of their beauty, then what was this blending with animal and human DNA all about?
Yeah.
Now, I think, from purely a spiritual and maybe metaphysical point of view, that creation of humans by God, first of all, the Hebrew Old Testament, God created man, and he says it is ta'ud. It is very good. It's exactly what I wanted it to be. But the sense there is, these were vessels now that had been created that were appropriate temples into which God's Holy Spirit
yes.
could dwell.
Yeah.
Now, when the Watchers came down, maybe it was necessary to alter at the genetic level these humans, so that now, instead of being potential vessels of the Holy Spirit, they become vessels for these rebel spirits. They become something different. They become something God had not created, into which they could incarnate themselves. Now, that may sound wild, but the implication behind that is in Genesis, where, and I love reading the interlinear Hebrew Bible,
yeah.
in Genesis 6:2, where it says, "The B'nai Elohim saw the daughters of Adam, that they were fit extensions."
Hmm.
Now, the term there, fit extensions, is understood by many scholars as meaning something what I might refer to as a portal,
yeah.
a gateway. The use of molecular energy being manipulated at the genetic or the atomic or the subatomic level, somehow being changed, altered, in order to format a navigational dimensional pathway.
Yeah.
in which each creature is supposed to recreate, quote, after its own kind.
Yeah.
What if by breaking that species barrier, these watchers had successfully mingled human, animal, plant DNA,
yeah,
and had, according to the ancient text, Book of Enoch, and had combined the hereditary traits of these several species into a new mutation, a Nephilim, that might suddenly possess the combined intelligence, the instincts, the seeing and hearing and smelling and reacting to the environment of different life forms in ways that was unfamiliar to ancient men. Now, that's not just mythology. Modern biologists today tell us that they classify the functions of genes inside of their native species, but they're unaware, in many cases, how a gene's coding might begin reacting when taken from one species to another.
Yeah.
And we're already finding in genetically modified crops that it means unpredictable changes to the species.
Yeah.
Things that cannot be forecast, things that happen that we do not foresee through the merging of different species into one wholly new species.
Yeah.
Now, one of the sciences, of course, that I talk about in my book, The Ahriman Gate, and I talk about it quite a bit, is the science of transgenics. Transgenics is the science of altering the genetic structure, and by the way, in some cases, even the nature of a species by introducing DNA of a different species into its genome. And this is not theoretical science. We're already tinkering in many, many ways in this way. We're already doing transgenic science to human embryos, having their molecular biology altered through inserting animal. And by the way, if you can accept the staggering possibility, alien DNA into the genome. You might have saw the news over the past couple of days where on several fronts the push now to clone humans, not just to clone humans, but to transgenically alter them at the genetic level. This is already moving forward. It's already funded. The team that brought us Dolly the Sheep is moving ahead with transgenic human cloning. Harvard University has received funding and is now moving ahead. There was another news report out today. They're already moving ahead. They're already doing this science. It's in the lab right now.
Of course.
Where we are creating transgenically altered human species. BioEdge, which is an online biotechnology magazine, they ran an article just a couple of days ago that we ran at Raiders News Update. You may have ran it too at your great website, is it redice.com?
Red-ice.net is
the address. Ice.net.
Yep.
These gentlemen go to that site. It's fantastic. But
thank you.
They ran an article called Upgrading to Humans 2.0. Did you see that?
Yeah, I did.
And they were talking about the mutants, you know, in these X-Men films, and they were saying it's not fanciful, it's not ridiculous.
Exactly.
And they, of course, were quoting some of the stuff that was coming out of that recent Stanford University Law School that had about 150 academics that went to it from Europe and Asia and New Zealand and across the United States, who were discussing, in fact, the imminent future enhancement of the human intellect and body into something that modern men have never seen before. Donna put up a headline today over there at Raiders News Update. I haven't even had a chance to read the whole thing, but it was a story that came out last night from CNN, who announced a new series that they're starting now and they're going to be doing over the next 3 weeks on futurism and whether or not all of this new technology is leading us. And I love the title of their article. It's called Heaven or Hell.
Yeah.
Are we going now with this technology to heaven or hell? What an appropriate question, because I think we may be reintroducing a science that was part of the conflict between the beings that are typically defined in Western Judeo-culture, at least, as those forces that came to us from heaven and from hell.
Yeah.
And so let me get back on track. By blending humans and animals, we literally could be creating something that hasn't existed except just before and right after the flood, the Great Flood. We could be creating something on the order of the X-Men. Now, why do I say that? Because getting back to what molecular biologists tell us, we know that both in science and solid theory that animals do things we can't do. They can sense earthquakes.
Yeah.
They migrate based on a science that we don't even understand. We don't know how pigeons fly back to a place over very large periods, areas of ground, and,
yeah.
and carrier pigeons, and wind it back where they are. We know that they can smell, certain animals, can, like dogs, can smell tumors. We know that dogs can hear sounds as high as 40,000 hertz, and dolphins a lot higher than that, something like 100,000.
Yeah.
It's also known that some of these animals see wavelengths of the electromagnetic spectrum that are beyond human ability.
Hmm.
And in all of this, Henrik, I suspect, as our understanding of quantum physics, including light matter and dark matter, expand, I think we're going to come to more fully appreciate the Bible's references to
yeah.
beings of light and beings of darkness.
Yeah.
We may only now be coming to a point in human understanding that the natural world as we view it, the matrix of our day-to-day lives,
yeah.
Which is only a fragment of, I think, reality.
Exactly.
We're only now understanding that exoteric knowledge is
yeah.
only a small piece of esoteric or metaphysical supernatural reality.
Yeah.
And this is something that the ancients of the Bible and other societies understood, but Western knowledge, which has so dominated the world's approach to science, has corrupted, I think, has diminished. And I think it's something that in eternity we're going to laugh at, because there's far more that we don't see. And I can tell you that
yeah.
as a former exorcist. Far more that we don't see that exists all around us.
Yeah.
They are there beyond the veil. The beings and the science of light and darkness, the angels and demons and ET.
Yeah.
Now, I see the clock ticking, and I know we're going to run out of time.
Yeah, sure. Go ahead. We have about almost nine minutes. So go ahead.
Am I going on too much?
No, it's great. Please continue.
Okay.
Yeah.
My point about transgenics and these animals, we usually never see things like angels, demons, things like that. I mean, there are exceptions to that rule, even in the Bible.
Yeah.
But typically, we don't see them. They're beyond our ability to see or understand, other than casual experiences. But what about the animals? And especially, what about certain kind of animals? Animals may, in fact, be able to see those beings, spirits. And the Bible, of course, provides verification for that in the story of Balaam's donkey, where the donkey sees the angel standing in the middle of the road with its sword drawn, is going to take off dumb Balaam's head, and Balaam keeps kicking the donkey, trying to get it back onto the road. But researchers also have uncovered evidence outside of the Bible that animals seem to they seem to react to things that are unseen. They
yeah.
seem to notice something that we don't see. Dogs barking and growling at nothing, or running and hiding under the bed.
Yeah, absolutely.
Now, when it comes to this question of transhumanism and transgenics, imagine what it could mean if government laboratories, some of these laboratories that are already funding research we've talked about just a moment ago,
yeah,
with unlimited budgets, working beyond congressional review.
Yeah.
What if they were decoding the gene functions that lead to animal propensities of sense and smell and sight?
Yeah, Tom, I must ask you. I mean, who are these guys who are involved in this kind of research? Do you think that they know something here, or who are they involved with, so to speak?
Well, you know, you go to Google, type in extended warfighter programs, type in DARPA. Look at some of the things that we're already doing, where we're changing. We're already doing this.
Yeah.
It's astonishing that it's already funded and most of our society is not even talking about it. We're changing soldiers at the genetic level. It's
yeah.
only on the experimental side right now, or at least as far as I know, we haven't yet deployed these guys. But, I mean,
yeah.
we're talking about what you mentioned, the series that I did with Steve Quayle, which was a four-hour series. We're
yeah.
literally talking here on one level about what could be the ultimate psychotronic warfare
yeah.
being committed against populations by these agenteurs who appear to be human, but proto-humans
yes.
who can see and even interact with invisible forces.
Yeah.
I know it sounds astonishing, but it's based on emerging science.
It is.
And yet, biblical and apocryphal texts may indicate such was the case already once before
yeah.
with the Nephilim,
yeah.
which brings an entirely new context to the fear factor that ancient men might have had of those beings. And yet, even that that terrifying possibility alone is only the tip of the iceberg. Mm-hmm. Because if interbreeding between regular and transgenic humans, which is a possibility that not only do many people believe explains what happened in Genesis 6 and why the flood came and both before and after certain beings were destroyed, but now they see it as being an imminent repossibility. That's the reason why in the back of their mind, that's the reason why the writers of CNN who announced this three-week series that they're going to be doing, that's why they called it Heaven and Hell, because it's an imminent repossibility. Given modern man's science and tendency to throw caution to the wind whenever given the chance to play God, that we may be reintroducing something now that could bring us to hell. Because if interbreeding between these transhumans and regular humans ever occurs, and by the way, ladies and gentlemen, let me make an announcement. It is going to occur. It's going to occur. And soon. And there's no getting around it, because we're funding it now. It's happening at the top law schools in the U.S. and in the U.K. and other places. They're already funding it. They're already doing it. Well, what happens when these beings whose DNA has been altered, who's been transmutated into a different life form that is a blend of various species, and with the animals, not only are they blending them with other mammals and things like that, they're blending them with plants. Yeah. They're even creating synthetic biological forms that they're blending them with, things that have never existed within our environment. Now, what happens when these transhumans grow up and start intermarrying with the rest of us? What happens is the mutated DNA gets out of the bottle. And when and if that happens, alien or animal characteristics are introduced to the human species, and it begins altering the human genetic code, and eventually through intermarriage, it eliminates humanity as we know it today. Yeah. And that's why some people believe that current advances by modern scientists in this effort to blend the DNA of various species using transgenics, which is already happening in modified crops, mice with human brains, goats with human blood, rabbit human embryos, chimeras of various kinds, and now human clones being transgenically altered. That's why people see this as being a prophetic, and not only for future generations, but now.
Exactly.
How much time do I have, Henrik?
We have about 3 minutes, so please go ahead. It's great.
Look, something that always intrigued me, and may only now be making real sense, is this twofold part of the Genesis 6 story, where on the first hand, you had mature women who were used, who were changed, who were altered to become these fit extensions, these acceptable hosts. So think about that. Not only are we talking about future generations through germline engineering, we're talking about genetic reengineering or altering of fully grown specimens somehow. And I think that was illuminated further in Genesis 10 concerning Nimrod when it said he began to be a mighty. The whole implication is there, at one point in his life, there was a turning point. He began to become a mighty, and the word mighty there is Giborim. He began to become a Giborim, which most scholars associate with the Nephilim, either as being identical to the Nephilim or the offspring of the Nephilim. So the question then is the story in Genesis, including Genesis 6, is it a record of mature, fully grown humans being altered at the genetic level? And then secondly, why? And here's the interesting thing. The offspring of that genetic alteration led to the reincarnation of dead Nephilim, beings that were in the belly of the earth. I can prove this over and over and over again through both the Bible and ancient stories. Look at the rendering in Genesis 6:4. Afterward, when the B'nai Elohim, now we're talking about after the flood, afterward, when the B'nai Elohim came into the daughters of Adam and they bore to them, the ones that they bore were the powerful ones which existed from ancient times, the men of name.
Yeah.
Meaning the ones that were born to them had already existed once before. They were reincarnated. Now, what are we doing in science today? And what gateways might we potentially be opening?
That is the question.
study the Rapha. I'm probably out of time now. Anyway.
No, sure. We got about 30 seconds only. I mean, we're right at the peak here. So go ahead if you got something. Yeah.
Study the Rephaim.
Yeah.
Spirits of the dead Nephilim, which carries the meaning to heal or to be healed as in a resurrection. in what's called the Rosh Hashanah text, the Rephaim are described as both human and divine beings who worship the Amorite god Baal, the ruler of the underworld. And in the underworld, they served as the acolyte assembly. But the book of Job offers this intriguing bit of insight on the Rephaim when it says, dead things are formed under the waters. The dead in that text are the Rapha. Mm-hmm. And the phrase are formed is from hul, meaning to twist or to whirl, as in a double helix coil or genetic manufacturing. And the next time, if I'm on your show, I'll give you a lot more scriptures that talk about that.
Exactly. Yeah, we gotta end it. I'm sorry. We gotta do this some other time because it's been great, and we just got halfway through, I guess. So
we did.
Thank you so much, Tom, for being on the show.
Well, Henrik, thank you for inviting me on.
Yeah, thank you, and everybody listening out there. Do remember his website, which is RaidersNewsUpdate.com. And check out the R.M. and Gate, his book. And we're totally out of time, so do listen next time. This has been Red Eyes Radio. Thanks for listening. Bye-bye, everyone.
You have been listening to BBS Radio, a blogandservice.com production and a service to others endeavor. Thank you very much for tuning in to our radio program, and we wish you much peace and joy on your journey.